This podcast is brought to you by ORC HSE Strategies, an industry leader in developing innovative, sustainable approaches for protecting workers and the environment. ORC HSE is known as an honest broker and a source of responsible business positions on EH&S legal and regulatory issues. Now, what ORC HSE does is they maintain a constructive working relationship with policymakers in industry, labor, government, and key professional associations. And they keep all members abreast of important legal developments and help them navigate the thorny technical, legal, and regulatory issues that are our lives in EH&S. If you're interested in learning more about the unique opportunities available through ORC HSE, please contact our friend Linda Haney at 202-510-0509. Or, if you'd rather, drop her an email at linda.haney@orchse.com. That's Linda, L-I-N-D-A, dot Haney, H-A-N-E-Y, at orchse.com. Now, let's go on to the podcast. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am the substitute worker, the short service contractor they bring in to actually manage the podcast for Todd Conklin. He is so incredibly busy. He doesn't have time, so he hires me, an exact look-alike and sound-alike, to actually do the podcast. No, I'm kidding. Are you guys? I wouldn't do that to you guys. You get the full-blown me. All of me. Warts and all. I don't really have warts. I got a ton of other problems, but warts is not one of them. I have 99 problems, but warts ain't one. So today's podcast is interesting. You're going to like it. Everything's going grand here. You know, fall, I've made no secret about it, is my favorite time of the year. And now we're encroaching on winter. The winter is coming, which for us is kind of interesting. It does make travel fun because now all the heat goes off the storms in Houston to the snow in Chicago, because it's always something. I mean, it's always going to be something that messes you up. And I'm currently really mad at all the airlines. I'm super mad at Southwest because they're late all the time, and I just don't get it. Their ground operations has been leaned out so much that they no longer have the capacity to handle the number of people that they sell tickets to, which just drives me berserk because you sold the tickets. It's not like these people are a surprise. You know, when the plane lands, it's not a surprise. A lot of people, you know, we bought a contract for that, and there's lots of indicators that tell you it's coming. So don't act surprised. Have somebody there to open the door. Get the luggage out. I waited 15 minutes because they couldn't figure out anybody to open the door the other day. And I'm just like, really? Come on. Hello? But that's neither here nor there and kind of sounds whiny. This podcast today, I think you're going to like. I like a lot. This is a friend I've had for many, many, many years. And I think we met, if I remember correctly, I think we met at a waste management conference I spoke at a million years ago. Like back when waste management was managed in stone tablets. Now it's quite a bit more up to date. They actually use paper. They haven't got the computers yet. No, I'm teasing, all joking. But this is my friend Rodney Grieve. And Rodney has a company he calls Branta Worldwide. And I'm really excited to get Rodney on the podcast because Rodney's a safety guy, kind of the IH, the brains of the outfit guy. But he comes at it from really a leadership competency approach, which I actually kind of think he's onto something. I'm not sure we benefit tremendously from training workers and telling them to be more safe. I mean, I think it's a nice thing to do, but I'm not sure it has much dramatic impact in actually prevention of events. But I do know we make our money back tenfold when we can get leadership in the room to talk about how leadership responds matters. Because leaders' behavior really helps define a great part of the organization's culture. You know, if a leader is excited and willing to learn, understands that failure is a part of success, and values learning, that leader is going to have a really smart organization. If the leader is really more the victim of an accident, so the leader feels like they have to punish the worker somehow in order to sort of even the score. He cost me money, therefore I'll give him 2 weeks without pay and cost him money. That's a different level and a whole different understanding and approach to how we manage safety. The new view tells us in no uncertain terms that leadership behavior matters. How leaders respond to failure makes a huge difference in how the organization understands and learns from failure. And that's kind of what Rodney picks up on. I think you'll find this podcast interesting. It's already kind of interesting. They're all pretty interesting. I try to not put ones that aren't interesting on. But I think you'll find this very, there's a challenge around words like right and choice, words that we use all the time. And since we were talking about how communication matters and how words matter, I really talked to Rodney a lot about the words that he used in the discussion of the work he does. Sit back and relax. You're going to enjoy it. It's hard not to just adore Rodney. He's a great guy, and he's a really, really good leadership coach. If that's a need area you have, and you know who you are, I'm not going to say any names, but hello, you're out there. If that's a need area you have, Rodney's the person for you. So without much further ado, ladies and gentlemen, will you please sit back and relax? Here is Rodney Grieve from Brenta Worldwide and the podcast for today. Peace. Where have you found yourself drifting to expertise-wise?
Primarily in the space around how leaders interact with their frontline employees. So primarily in that frontline leader space, and helping them realize the impact they have on the day-to-day decisions that their employees make. And what's been really cool lately is the work I've been doing internationally. And almost every organization I go into, one of the first things they say is, Rodney, you got to understand, we're different here.
Yes, we're not like everyone else. We're special. Yeah, we're different.
We're different. And I had a guy, this was years ago in Northern California, say, no, really, you got to understand, we're a unique group of individuals in a unique work environment, just like everybody else. And when you think about it, he's absolutely correct. Every group that I work with, they are a unique group of individuals in their unique work environment. And just like everybody else, when you start to talk about what leaders do, how they impact the people around them, what the culture people want to work in or know they need to work in to provide the optimal results and those results around safety, it's consistent. And what's been really fun is the international work has exposed to me that consistency is not just a U.S. issue. People in Italy, people in Switzerland, people in Brussels, people in Africa, people in Korea, they all want the same things. They want their leaders to understand what they need from them and adjust their behavior to meet their needs, and create an environment where there's high levels of trust and credibility and open and honest communication and feedback.
So how important do you think leadership is to performance reliability, to safety, to resilience, to robustness, all those things we talk about? How important is leadership?
Well, I can't remember who I heard say it. It was years ago that people make decisions based on the decisions we make every day are based on two things: the information we have at that particular moment in time and the culture in which we exist. And it is those two things, they're making those decisions. And when an employee is working on a task and they make a decision to go left or right based on the information they have at that moment in time and the culture in which they exist, they make that decision instantaneously. And sometimes that decision ends up with them getting injured. And if you think about it, if they thought, you know what, I'm going to make this decision and that's going to cause me to get hurt, they wouldn't make that decision.
How much of it do you think is really a decision, though? I've become really fixated on the fact that what we assume is a choice in retrospect is oftentimes simply a reaction, like a cultural artifact, if you will, in context. What do you think about that?
No, I completely agree with you. And that's where I'm saying is that influence of the culture, the and simply defined as the way we do things around here, that is that when I say that that decision is an instantaneous decision, it is just a response to what the culture is, the way we do. What's emphasized, what's recognized, what's rewarded, what's ignored, what's punished, what's disciplined. And all of those things come back to the frontline leader who creates the culture. One of the questions I love to ask people is, what do you make? And I usually get two responses. The first is not enough, because they think in financial terms.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then the other is they tell me this product or service that their company provides. And what I'm more interested in is, and what I think each of us makes every day, the most important thing we make is the culture in which us and the people around us live. And that is reflected in those decisions or reactions, as you say, of our employees. They look at the boss to figure out what it is, how we do things around here.
When you think about leadership's sort of leadership behavior matters, how leaders act matters in order to sort of create the culture. I agree with everything you're saying. Then what's interesting is allowing the word choice or decision to be used retrospectively really takes the burden off of the leader and puts it on the worker. Had the worker made a better choice, right?
Right.
Then we would be great. It's not my problem. It's their problem. One of the things I listen for, and I'd be curious what you think, in any language, in unus idiomas, is victim talk. When leaders sound like they're victims, right? This isn't my problem. It's their problem. What more can I do? I had a leader one time tell me, at some point, Todd, you have to take the spotlight off me and put it on the people in the field who make bad choices. That really indicates to me that the organization really is troubled. I don't know how else to say it. It's a mess. What do you think about that?
So they're on that same vein. There's a couple other comments that I hear. So it's those comments around, I can't believe my employee would do something so stupid, or they would just be an idiot. So it's the blaming the employee and never holding up the mirror as a leader saying, what have I done? What have I said or not said? What have I done or not done that's created that environment where that employee makes that reaction?
How do you get them to do that and hire you back? I mean, it seems like anyone could do it once, right?
Right.
Never bring Rodney back. For God's sakes, get rid of him.
And that's a tough message to hear. And what the leaders that I work with and the organizations I work with, one of the things that I hear consistently from leaders as you get higher and higher in the organization is nobody's willing to give me that feedback. Everybody's afraid to say to the boss, you know what you're doing is getting in the way of us being able to deliver these results. And here's what you need to do differently. And I've yet to meet a senior leader who fires employees because they give them honest and open feedback on what they're doing and the impact it's having within the organization.
But realistically speaking, if I work in the organization, can I be a prophet in my own country? Does my voice sound like it has fidelity if I work there, or does it sound like I don't like you? I mean, that's a really interesting phenomenon there.
Well, part of it is and one of the things that I do with companies is help them create that common language, that leadership language, so that they understand why. So they're using the same terms, which allows for those conversations to be more genuine. And it's not putting words in their mouths, because that takes away the authenticity of it. But it's giving them a structure and a language to work around so that it doesn't sound like, oh, I'm just complaining, but I'm giving honest feedback on the impact, or at least in how I'm perceiving the impact that you are having on the people around you.
And how important is that ultimately to creating a safe and reliable workplace? I mean, where does that all tie together?
So let me give you an example.
Please do.
I was working with a heavy manufacturing company in central Pennsylvania, and they had had several injuries. And I went in and started talking to people about what was going on and why they were having the injuries. And one of the things that kind of came up consistently was, well, it was a rush job. And so I went to the leadership team and said, there's a feeling that, you know, it's the rush jobs that are the problem. And the leadership team says, we don't have rush jobs. There's nothing in our organizational structure and the way we communicate and the way we identify projects or tasks. There's nothing that stamps things rush. There's no red folder that says this is a rush job. There's no such thing as a rush job. So I went back to some employees and said, do you have rush jobs? And they said, yeah, we have rush jobs. And I said, how do you know it's a rush job? And one employee described it better than I've ever heard anybody describe it. He says, you know it's a rush job when four people come ask you, how's it coming, instead of just one.
So that's amazing and very true. I mean, that's a clear signal. You're right on target there.
So if you go back to the leadership team and say, do you realize that if you're the head of sales or you're the head of engineering or you're the VP and you go out on the plant floor and the only time you go out on the plant floor and talk to your employees is when you want to know when a particular job is going to be done, that employee does not hear, how's it going? What they hear is, when are you going to be done? And as soon as they hear that, then their thought process, their culture, their information starts to become, you know what? It's about getting the productivity. It's not about that success, that balance of productivity, quality, and safety.
And so that's interesting because a lot of leaders tell me, you know, I'm on the floor a lot. I go out with the guys a lot. It's the quality of the visit that really dictates whether the visit's meaningful or not, right? It's not just the presence. Like I had a guy tell me, you know, I'm on the back end of a shovel right along with my guys. Well, that sounds great. But the message you give while you're on that shovel, what you're saying and what you're doing, is paramount to sort of creating an environment where there's strong reliability. You know, if you see safety as a capacity, you also probably have to see leadership as a capacity. Is that fair?
Yes, I think leadership absolutely is a capacity. I think safety, though, is a result.
See, I would disagree with you pretty strongly. I think when you see safety as a result, right, then what happens is you start building systems that create safety as an outcome, right? That's the whole notion of a result. And the problem is that we don't manage safety as an outcome. It's really hard to determine if you're safe or if you're lucky, right? At the end of the event, if nothing happened, were you safe? Well, that's the answer to that could be yes, but it could also be no. I mean, when you think about, and I really do, I think about leadership like, or safety like leadership. It's a capacity that we build into the organization. We don't really manage accidents, right? Accidents are unintentional deviations from expected outcomes. They're surprises. Right. What we actually manage is the organization's capacity to have that accident safely. They have the failure, but they manage the consequence. That's not an outcome. That's an always present capacity that organizations that are super reliable understand and manage as a capacity, like leadership. What do you think?
So when I say safety is a result, the way I look at it is there are results that we're asked to produce: the productivity, quality, safety, customer satisfaction, employee morale, employee retention. All of those things require us to do a bunch of other stuff really well and right. And when we do those things well and right, then at the end of the day, we produce those results. If you look at safety as a result as purely as we haven't had any OSHA recordable injuries, then I agree with you. Then that is just a matter of luck. So that's the problem with the measure of what is safety success. And to me, it comes back to what is that measure of success? The measure of success for me is around the culture we're creating. And if we can create the right culture around that open, honest communication, that trust, the credibility, collaboration, continuous improvement, if we can do that and stay focused on that everything we do, we run through that filter of, is it helping us create this culture? Then at the end of the day, we can look back and say, you know what? We produced quality, productivity, safety, not because we just got lucky and everybody showed up with the same or went home with the same number of fingers and toes that they came to work with, but we did what we did the right way, and that meant we followed our procedures. We made sure we're training.
So let me interrupt you a minute there because I really want to pull the string on what right means, because when you say we did what we did the right way, the question I want to ask you is, who determines what right is? And is there one right way to do every job? Right. And that's where you get into this sort of adaptive nature of how safety sort of lives. If risk moves, ebbs and flows in real time, and it does, right? Risk is very fluid. And the assumption then is that a procedure is the right way to do the job. The problem is that the procedure itself can't manage the variability, right? So we know that. So procedures are terrible when anything happens that wasn't thought about. So something beyond sort of the safety basis. I wrote this procedure for kind of the ideal state.
Correct.
And I give the worker a less than ideal place to do the job. So we don't have perfect people. We don't have perfect work. We definitely don't have perfect clients, and we don't have perfect procedures. That notion of right becomes almost a retrospective value that we put on those workers afterwards. So when you say do things the right way as a product of the culture, what does right mean?
If you're looking at it from the perspective of the culture,
right?
So right doesn't necessarily mean follow the procedure, because you may find that you're right, there's a deviation and the procedure no longer will work or will get us to where we want to go. So if in a culture where we've created that common language, that definition of success around a culture, that those shared leadership language and skills, then we've created an environment where people are willing to raise their hand and say, this is not going to work in this situation at this time. We need something different, or we need something more, or we need different tools or different equipment or different people or different procedure or different whatever that different might be. But to get people to recognize when that deviation is present before just moving forward and hoping they can just manage their way through it.
So, but deviations are always present. In fact, deviations are really super normal.
Right.
And so if we expect them to stop before a deviation that has potential negative consequence happens, then we're really asking the employee to be kind of psychic, right? So one of the things that I would challenge around the traditional view of safety, not really challenging you, but challenging the sort of the overall view of safety, is that we really want people, leaders often, let me preface what I'm going to say with this. Leaders are almost always fixated in fixing the last problem.
Correct.
Whereas the people that we hang out with are really interested in sort of solving the next problem before it becomes a problem.
Right.
Right? So leaders have this kind of retrospective bias, not by choice, not because they're evil people, but because by the time they get the problem already has retrospect, right?
Right.
And so they're in a position at that point, I think, to actually, by their actions, by what they say and what they do, to really drive culture either in one direction or another. I'm kind of, this is way oversimplified, but I'm kind of convinced that organizations have two choices. They can learn and improve, or they can blame and punish.
Correct.
But they can't do both. So if you choose to learn and improve, you do it at the cost of the ability to blame and punish.
Right.
That's a whole cultural phenomenon. The more you blame and punish people, the less information I'll give my leadership. Because if I give you bad news and you punish me, I'll stop giving you bad news, as long as you keep paying me.
Correct.
The other side of that, though, I think is even more interesting. When you choose to learn and improve, which I always sort of hope organizations are on that trail, they want to learn and improve, they want to learn and get better, they do so, the benefit they gain from learning and improving really outweighs the ability to sort of blame and punish. And what we're really talking about is sort of pushing leadership away from the fundamental attribution bias, which is, you know, basically if a worker walks across a parking lot and trips on a rock, the worker should have been more careful. If a boss walks across the parking lot and trips on a rock, somebody should clean that damn parking lot.
Right.
Right. And that's that shift that exists in retrospect. And one of the things that I think is so interesting about the work you do, and I really do find this incredibly interesting, is that leaders almost always live in retrospect. Right. They think they live in strategic sort of prevention, or I can't believe I'm going to say this word. I hate this word. They think they're being proactive.
Right.
Right. But in reality, they're almost always being reactive to something. The board, the owners, the workers, the event, the client, whoever it is that sort of has the power in that situation. What do you say about all that?
Well, one of the things that when I'm working with that frontline leader group, is really getting them to take the blinders of looking for problems off. Most of us have been recognized and rewarded throughout our careers for going out looking for and finding problems, which comes back to that retroactive evaluation of what's going on, right? We're looking for what's already gone wrong.
Yeah, for sure.
Instead of going out and looking for what is going right, and how do we make sure that we're encouraging and providing the feedback and engaging people in the discussions about what they're doing well and how they can continue to do that well.
Do you see where that shifts safety from an outcome, from a result, to more of a capacity? So the traditional definition of safety is kind of a negative-based definition, the absence of failure, right?
Correct.
What you're shifting them to, if you make them look at work and success, what is it that goes right? Because way more things go right than go wrong.
Absolutely.
Then you're shifting the focus to really a more of a positive basis. So now safety is not the absence of failure. Safety is really the presence of safeguards, or the presence of controls, or the presence of leadership. And really, I like to use the word, I haven't found a better word, but I like to use the word capacity, because capacity means leadership, it means incentive programs, it means salary programs, it means performance management programs, it means safety, it means quality. All those things are sort of capacities that create reliability. What do you think about that?
So my concern with that is, and I mean, I like the language,
fight like crazy, push back, baby. That's why we're here.
I understand. So one of the things that my biggest challenge, and I think we would probably agree on this, that safety is not a value within an organization. People who say their core values, one of them is safety. I have a hard time grasping that, because what I would define as that value of safety, somebody else is going to have a very different definition. And one of the tools that I use an awful lot is situational leadership through the Ken Blanchard organization. And when it talks about competencies and people's ability and competence, it's not talking about that they lack a potential or they can't do it. It just means that they've never done it before at a demonstrable level of success. And so when I look at producing that result of safety, in other words, it being successful with doing whatever task you're doing, so at the end of that task you can say, yep, I did it well, and I did it in the manner that kept me and people around me from getting hurt. Not everybody has that. And so when I hear the word capacity, and maybe I'm misunderstanding how you're saying it, but when I hear the word capacity, I think technical knowledge and experience to recognize a particular situation. And I'm not sure that everybody would have that same ability.
Well, everyone wouldn't, right? I mean, you'd have different levels of capacity, just as you have different levels of competency, right?
Correct.
And I think competency is a great word as well. I mean, if you think about a heavy equipment operator, they have competency. And when they mean competency, they mean they're not going to put their worst dozer operator on their highest performing, most technical, most important job, right? They're gonna look for people that have lots and lots of experience and that have really they're competent at actually doing this work. That is really managing in a preventive way. That's managing the success of the work, and that's right. A leadership function, right? You put the right people in the right job for the right reasons. If we use the word right a lot, right?
Correct.
Right. So we're matching risk to capacity,
which I find very, very interesting, because the particularly when we look at leadership at the very front line, those frontline leaders, they are far more often put into those roles because of their technical capabilities than their capacity to be a leader.
Sure, because what matters, what we measure, is production.
Right.
We can use, I'm with you, the word value is really kind of it's a little bit fluffy at every level, right? But
right.
Ultimately what we care about, the way we keep score is in dollars, or euros or
right.
You know, wherever you are, right? Bots, or just depending on what country you're in. That scorekeeping actually is how we sort of see, because the world really wants results, right?
Correct.
And so results matter. But I love what you're saying about working with leaders. And one of the things that I think is really important to bring up in this conversation is that this kind of resource around leadership and safety, really it's really not safety, it's really leadership and resilience, the ability to effectively perform the function that you perform. There aren't a lot of resources like you out in the world. I mean, this is really cool because in my mind, and you can tell me I'm wrong, Rodney, I'll take it. In my mind, the group that needs the most work, the most training, the most education, the most mentoring, the most coaching, the most ability to practice these skills are not the workers. The workers are actually quite good at adaptively problem solving in the field. They do it all the time.
Yes.
The group that needs the help are the people who lead those very, very competent, very adaptive workers in the field. And there's just not much of that out there. I mean,
no.
That's what you bring to the table, right?
Right. That's exactly. Yeah. Because those people get put into a role, you know, an organization goes to them and say, hey, you're really good at running this piece of equipment. Now get six or seven other people to be just as good as you are. And if they don't have the skills and abilities around understanding that it is not just common sense, it is not just it came natural and easy maybe for them, but it's not going to come natural and easy for everybody else. There's a reason that people like Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and were not very good basketball coaches. They were tremendous basketball players, but when they come off of the court and get put in that chair to teach other people to be just as effective, to motivate, to influence, to get people to work together in a way that was very innate to them, they struggle because they have a harder time picturing that. When you look at the guys who are really good professional coaches or college coaches in some cases, they weren't the stars. They were the guy, the 12th man on the bench, the guy at the very end who had some physical abilities to be able to get there, but really had to understand the game and struggle to understand the game and the system and how it all worked together to keep their place on that team. And they're the ones who then become really good at seeing how to motivate and connect and integrate all the pieces together to make it successful. And so that's the challenge I think most organizations do is they put way too much weight on technical competency and promote. And it happens not just in the production floor. It happens in engineering. It happens in sales. It happens in organizations, in every element of the organization. And it starts to become a double-edged sword is not only have you now lost your best person at doing that particular task, you've now made them ineffective in leading the people who you're trying to get to be your next best person to do that task.
Wow. So how do people contact you? If they're interested in bringing somebody like you into work, really at that leadership level, and I promise you, there's a bunch of people interested in that, how do they contact you?
Best way is through email is Rodney, R-O-D-N-E-Y, at Branta, Branta.com. Or they can visit my website, which is branta.com.
Super cool. What do you think? Did this suck?
No, it's fabulous. I love the discussion because it makes me think about what I'm doing and think, oh, am I using the wrong words? Or could I couch that or phrase that in a different way to resonate more effectively with people?
That's Rodney Grieve. What do you think, huh? Interesting. It was great. It was a good conversation for sure. Lots going on there.
we'll see what happens. We'll see what the follow-up is. But I enjoyed it. It's always fun. That's the great thing about the podcast. It's always fun. Get to talk to a lot of different people. That's the show for today. Sorry for keeping you a little long. I thought it was worth it. I didn't know what to cut out, so I thought that was worth it. So here we go. Until then, thanks for listening. Review us if you get a chance. That's always valuable. Makes a huge difference. Don't know why, but it does. The numbers are great. Thanks for being a part of it. Most importantly, thank you for listening. That works out really well. Have a lot of fun today. Learn something new every single day. And for goodness sakes, be safe.